everyone, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Brian Beeler. With me today is Kevin, the lab breaker.
Hello.
We've also have in the office Adam, who's spent enough nights in California to almost be a resident.
Almost.
Remotely, we've got Tom. He only has four toes on his left foot, I'm told.
It's true.
It is. And we also have a new guest today, Blaze from Canada, who in his free time fills the plug from maple syrup taps.
Indeed I do.
See, there we go. So we've got an interesting mix of people today, interesting mix of conversation. A little light on the news this week because of the holiday, and next week there won't be a whole lot either, but the lab hasn't stopped. We're cranking out reviews, have a lot going on. Adam last week was in California and doing the IT press tour out there, and you met with, what, like half a dozen companies?
13, I think.
Full dozen of companies. Yeah. Baker's dozen of companies.
Yeah.
Speaking of Baker's Dozen, I know one of the groups you met with was DDN, who has a conglomerate of small companies they've acquired. Nexenta,
IntelliFlash, Tentry, Tejao.
WhamCloud.
WhamCloud, which all of them are going to be Tentry now, and DDN will be separate. It'll still be a supercomputer company.
Okay, so DDN will keep the real high-performance stuff separate for those workloads, and then they're going to continue to mesh these other brands together. Yeah, Tentry, I remember meeting with Mario at VMworld back in August, and Tentry was one that had always been a big player in virtualization and, of course, had fallen off a little bit in terms of awareness, and now they're really bringing that back and building the momentum there. It'll be interesting to see how they pull those together. Good space to watch. Tejao had a good following until WD got involved in that one. That didn't go super well. But you said that some of the teams come back to DDN to take on these projects.
Tentry. Yeah. The original people from Tentry, like Tom Ellery, I believe is his name.
All right.
He's back. Yeah, Tentry is basically taking the good pieces of all these products and combining it to their enterprise. So DDN's looking at enterprise versus just chasing after the supercompute market.
Well, it makes sense, right?
Yeah. I think the line between enterprise performance and supercomputing is going to get closer and closer.
Well, the capabilities are certainly continuing to build up in the mainstream enterprise type arrays. DDN's technology doesn't really lend itself well to going down market, so this will be the bridge there. You saw Haiku as well. That's a backup provider that started out in Nutanix space as their primary, but they've expanded their business since then.
Google and VMware and to the moon. They also had a new product. There's only two new announcements while we're out there. Protege, which is an application migration as a service. It's interesting to see Haiku and MinIO are two companies I've seen several times. And first seeing them from being so tiny startups to seeing them now where they have a foothold and everything, it's really interesting. Haiku, I think they've grown 300% year on year for the last 3 years.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you look at that backup and recovery space where it felt like maybe 2 years ago everything had sort of quieted down there. There wasn't a whole lot of new. And then when Cohesity and Rubrik really decided they didn't want to just be secondary storage, that they really wanted to be backup space as well, really shook things up and made the big guys take notice, but also the software only guys have been very aware, including Veeam, who we use here, and several of the other software guys.
But it's hard to just be one thing. I think if you're just one thing, you run the risk of somebody coming along, one of the big guys, deciding I want to be in that
one thing space too.
I'm going to play in that pool as well, and I'm much bigger. So,
I know you met with StoreCentric too, which is one that we've...
Interesting.
Yeah, so they've been another one to pick up a lot of sluggish brands, including they've got Vixada, Nexan, Drobo, and Retrospect. I don't know if I know the last one, but most of us know Drobo, and Nexan was one of the first in the hybrid storage spaces. I remember seeing them at some event 7 or 8 years ago wearing lab coats because what they were doing was so, sciencey, bringing flash into the mainstream storage array.
Yeah, it's amazing how some of the guys have adapted and other companies have just integrated that into what's commonplace now. And a lot of the early guys, I mean, they're gone. A lot of the like Drobo, for example, they were big on caching, and then everyone just kind of leapfrogged them to a fairly extensive degree.
Well, Drobo did a really good job of UI and interface.
Wait, early NAS was really, I mean, not terrible, but it was pretty awful from a how to set it up, get it running. And Drobo at the time was slick UI, slot the drives in, slot any drive in that you want, and go.
Yeah, the UI was always great, and then they, like you said, brought in caching and support for SSDs. What are they up to now, Adam?
Well, first we're speaking of Drobo past tense. Drobo's still around; they're just still doing well.
That's my fault.
They're a little kind of like a smaller medium NAS company. Not really medium, I guess, just smaller NAS.
Yeah, I'm looking at their site right now, and they still have an iteration of the B800 that we reviewed how many years ago?
5 years ago.
That the fat daddy that goes in the rack?
Yeah.
Had the rack on ears.
Yeah, that was I mean, it was like a 60-pound NAS that held in just on the ears.
Yeah, it had sort of a saggy ass thing on the back end, but I remember I talked to one of the Drobo guys years ago at dinner, and he said they had a publishing company in the
Yeah,
video
one of the
space.
not children's videos.
No, not children's videos. And they had a rack of these things where they were on both sides of the rack, butt to butt all the way down, and they were using that as part of their video production farm for low cost, easy to use storage. Anyway, they're back and they're doing some new things. And Nexan, what did you get a sense of what's going on with Nexan?
Not really, because the Vexata guy did the presentation. He
Okay.
was not as enthusiastic about Drobo or Nexan as he was
Well,
about Vexata.
yeah, that would be expected. We had actually made some good progress with Vexata. We gotta
Before
pick that
Store
up.
Centric came along and sucked them up. I mean, they're kind of where they were. Fujitsu still supplies the hardware. They're still claiming 70 gigabytes per second bandwidth. So.
So one of the other guys you met with was Scale Computing. They launched, and we talked about it last week in your absence, the Intel-based NUC HCI system. Tom and I did a call with them this week, and Kevin as well. Tom, what was your take on the NUCs?
Yeah, really an interesting play on their part. I kind of like the new term they came out with rather than scale up, scale out, they're talking about scale down computing, which I found interesting. But I wanted to get Kevin's take on using, because the nukes, right? Nukes. I guess in Canada it'd be Nuke A.
Yeah, right.
using an i7 processor, not an enterprise processor, and the things that it doesn't offer in an enterprise setting like ECC. Any thoughts on that, Kevin?
I think for these edge locations, I mean, their big point was these guys need to do it regardless of the hardware that's running on. And while the Nuke option might not be optimal yet, although it looks like it's moving in the direction of supporting features like Xeons and
Yeah, Xeon's
ECC.
definitely coming in these things.
I mean, it's a step up from just using a single off-the-shelf computer that may or may not be an eMachines from like 1999.
Jeez.
Like there's you're
Oh, they're
in an
never
environment
obsolete.
that at least there is some resiliency in the platform. It might not be enterprise bulletproof grade, but it's still a huge step up from what some of these guys might be running like on the back beer shelf.
Well, yeah, that's the good point though, right? Is it doesn't have to be a big cluster of HA everything throughout the whole thing. The point is not to address these big needs. And in fact, the first comment I got, Tom, around the NUC when I posted it on LinkedIn was someone chimed in saying, LOL, this is what edge computing has become now. And that sort of complacent attitude is what Scale is tipping on its head with this thing, because this three node cluster with 6 terabytes of flash, right? 2 terabytes of NVMe in each one of these things is the retail, I think, is like 5K. And that comes with perpetual licensing and all the other integrations that Scale has already. They showed us a little bit of that working in the presentation, Tom. What did any of that stand out to you?
Yeah, the price is definitely a, kind of a killer price. You look at vSphere, and vSphere's essential is, 576 just for the software. But when you get into the essential, I mean, that's just a hypervisor and a vCenter server. But and you can only scale to three nodes. And if you want to go more than that, you get to vSphere Essentials Plus, which is $5,768. That's just for the software to run.
You're not even talking vSAN yet.
Well, yeah. So right. The point these guys made is vSAN or Nutanix, all these guys have their SVMs that have to operate, and the resources the storage manager requires is going to be almost as it would almost be too great for some of these nukes to run. Like they're just so resource intensive, they can't be scaled down to kind of this microarchitecture. They're meant for a larger and up environment, not these edge cases.
And so if you're at a convenience store or something and you just need something to run POS and there's not a big data footprint, these things make a lot of sense, dead simple to use. And if one fails, you just send it back or throw it away and chunk in a new one and you're off and running. They showed the failure of one of these nodes at the
they had a three
press
cluster,
store, didn't they?
Three cluster running from the previous NUC. Nukes, and they were unplugging and plugging them in to show that it didn't.
And these things are passively cooled, right? Or a lot of them can be.
On the NUCs?
Yeah.
My NUC has a little fan on it, I think.
Wait, I'm just thinking like the a lot of these edge cases where, your refrigeration is usually a walk-in freezer or something. It's not a data center
closet. Not exactly
closet.
Data center grade.
And it's going to be not the most clean environment. You're going to be dealing with a lot of stuff and minimizing airflow, having no airflow requirements for these things. I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah, I think it's pretty neat too. The price point, and that's a list, so I'm not exactly sure.
And some of those nukes do have things like AMT, so you do have out of bounds communication to them. So that's definitely a plus. I've always been a big fan of Scale Computing. I think they just do a great job. I love their support. So I'm not knocking them. Just kind of wondering about the using i7 processor on them.
I think it gets back to the price point and the usability. If you need something with a moderate or very small storage footprint, and the cost is a big decision making factor. I mean, you think about what these things are replacing. In these types of scenarios, it's a server or two sitting on the desk or in a closet or something like that. And most of these locations aren't set up for the cooling or cleanliness, to Kevin's point, of a data room to make sure that these are well taken care of. So, the cost, I think, in ease of use, one dies, you plug a new one in, they sink, and off you go again. May not be perfect for every use case, certainly not, but for this low cost, high volume sort of thing in retail, makes a lot of sense. I mean, you can scale this thing up too if you want more robust hardware. They work with what's that Lenovo Enterprise, that little portable, or not portable, but their small server.
And I know what you're talking about, but the name is escaping me right now.
All right, anyway, Lenovo's got a little mini server that they launched at their customer event this summer.
The Nano?
No, it's like SE350 or something like that. Anyway, it's got those capabilities that bring the enterprise stuff forward, like your ECC, your Xeon.
SE350 Edge Server.
That's what I said. I got it.
Yeah.
All right. SE350 Edge Server, just as I said. So there's definitely ways to scale up for more robust hardware. It's not as if this is their only product, but it really just addresses that core need. All right, while we've got the Canadian here, Blaze, you did a bunch of work on the QNAP Mustang card. That's gotten some great engagement on the site. Tell us about that and why you were interested in pursuing Mustang in the first place.
Well, the device itself is quite literally a blade server in a form factor of a video card. So you have something that, at the price point of starting at less than $1,000 gives you the ability to have two independent CPUs, independent memory, independent storage, as well as a 10 gig backbone through a PCIe 4X connector. That, really for less than $1,000 to be able to drop it into, if you wanted to do a server, you can drop it into the PCI Express slot, or upgrade your existing QNAP NAS. QNAP was nice enough to send us over one of the TS-1277s. that that we were able to put the Mustang into, and it effectively gave us the ability to test and have a NAS unit that was running both an AMD CPU and an Intel CPU.
Yeah, we had that, and then we were also running those little Optane M.2 SSDs in there too for a little while.
Yeah, we ran into some capacity limitations.
Because of what, on those 180s or what are they?
I think they're 118s.
118, yeah. Those are a little Spartan in capacity.
Well, QNAP software really did try to protect us from ourselves. It flashed right up and told us, hey, you know, you can't use anything that's less than, I think it was 250 gigs on the actual devices through the wizard to set it up. Now, I mean, you could work around that, but... Well, I think that if they put it in there to protect us from ourselves, then we should really follow suit. And that's what we did. We replaced it, I believe it was with 500 gig modules from ADATA.
Yeah, we swapped those out, put in something bigger. I think it's neat, not just, you know, the Mustang technology is cool, but I've got to, you know, give a tip of the hat. I should have worn the cowboy hat today. To QNAP, they've done.
I think your wife still got that one.
They've done some really great things, and they're bringing quite a bit of innovation into, you know, the small office SMB NAS. That's pretty cool. Kevin, I know you were excited about their fiber channel support.
Yeah, it was rumored like a year or 2 years ago
that they were starting to play with that.
Yeah, and. I mean, that's the one area that you look at these small guys trying to move up in the enterprise space, and lack of fiber channel has been a pretty big deal, because EMC and, Dell EMC, HP, and others that leverage that MSA, the Dot Hill hardware.
Right. Seagate, please.
Yes. The Nitro platform. Used to be Dot Hill.
Right.
Everything's Nitro, though.
Yeah.
All these guys are trying to move up the stream, but they're limited to SIFS and iSCSI only. It's just tough to do fiber channel. And now QNAP is doing it. From our my early testing, it's working pretty well. I'm looking to get a box in that has SAS support in it, so I can do something more than just do like an NVMe share from one of these desktop boxes or a couple of SATA SSDs, but it's working surprisingly well.
Yeah, I was at the QNAP event out in California a couple weeks back, and they were talking about some of these upcoming features and talking about it, and talking to their customers that were there, so the resellers, channel partner guys, they're taking advantage of these things. Now, I don't know about Mustang specifically, because I think that's pretty niche, but Blaze, that started out, didn't it, as a crowdfunded platform?
Yes. It was a joint Kickstarter back in, I believe it was July of 2017. It was a joint venture with QNAP and IEI, which is QNAP's parent company. They were just looking to create low-cost, scalable computing accelerators. Initially, I mean, they wanted to raise $35,000 to bring these to market, and the Kickstarter squeaked in just over that at $36,000.
Yeah.
And I mean, they started rolling it out to backers in I believe it was October of 2017, and I guess QNAP and IEI brought it into production, because I mean, it's had a lot of interest.
Yeah, we had some fun with it, and appreciate your contribution on that as well. One other thing that occurs to me about the NAS space, at least the little guys moving up, is as you look at things like fiber channels, putting in these compute cards, GPU support, I know is another thing we're going to take a look at with Blaze and check out some of the support and opportunities there. Kevin, you've been messing around with containers on NAS as well. How's that going in your exploits so far, just messing around with it?
So it's actually pretty fun. I'm not sure if we've done any coverage on it, but we leverage a lot of Ubiquiti hardware in the lab, and I use it friends and family, a lot of people. It's really nice, rigid, and rugged platform to get up and running. And the controller, you can either leverage their hardware controller, or you can deploy a Docker container of it. And our first container exploit was leveraging the Ubiquiti controller in our environment. And so it's kind of dabbling around with that and kind of gaining the experience there. But it's the container space is pretty fun. It's kind of like the early days of virtualization. There's a lot of crazy hardware that is coming out to support it, different limitations. And the space is new enough that everyone can do their own little thing and no one's really doing it the right way or the wrong way. It's just like, it works.
Well, that's the thing, right versus wrong, and how these things get implemented and supported. There's a lot of maturity still to come in the container space around that.
Are you saying people are excited about containers in Kubernetes?
I think so.
Yeah, 12,000 people in San Diego. It'll be interesting to see if they can get 12,000 to go to Boston in November. But
we went 5,000, 8,000, then 12,000.
I know, it's 3 years. The KubeCon's growing. Yeah. Actually, I was talking to someone yesterday about trade show schedule for this year, and they rattled off the shows they're going to, and I said, "Yeah, you got to be part of KubeCon. It's just it's where the emerging excitement is. VMworld is for us probably the biggest and most diverse show that we go to, but KubeCon I think is starting to become a pretty close second there, perhaps rivaling some of the big world events." I should have brought it up while we were talking backup before, but we also got out a review of the Core Store from Quest, software-defined dedupe target software that came on a PowerEdge. What did you enjoy with that, or how'd you use that in our lab, Kevin?
We leveraged it as a target for our Veeam infrastructure. So SIFS target and deploy it as a storage for an existing backup environment, and it's pretty nice. It's you have backup targets in the space that are just kind of raw storage, and others that are kind of expecting, like, okay, most people will have to deal with recovery at some point, and they can run a tiered architecture, so you can have higher priority backups sit on a faster tier flash or move things out into a cloud tier as they're archived off. But it's a really fun architecture.
It came pre-configured for us.
It was a very heavy server.
we're not used to having things with hard drives. Kevin went to yank the thing out of the lab rack to do photos yesterday. I said, as he was walking past my office, "Remember, it's heavy." And I don't think he heard me. But when he unshimmied that thing from the rack, you sort of regretted your decision at that point, didn't you?
Yeah, I was trying to get to the ears of the server, since we're not using Rails with that, and it felt
like good lab does.
Yeah, it felt like it was Rails binding on something, but no, it's just like the 9,000-pound chassis. It's
of hard drives. Yeah, there aren't a whole lot of flash dedupe targets, although Dell EMC has one in their PowerProtect portfolio. We haven't seen that one yet. But I look forward to the days of backup targets being all flash, just from the standpoint of hauling those damn things around in the lab.
Yeah, the flash for a backup target really terrifies me as I look at drive writes per day. You think, like, most environments aren't going to be wiping away entire SSD and then filling it up again on a day-to-day basis. But some of these backup appliances, if that's your landing zone for your most recent backup, you might be actually filling that up and then moving it off and then filling it up on a could be an hourly or a daily or weekly basis.
Yeah, flash is cool though if you have to use it though. If you have to recover and you spin it up on your backup target for a few minutes until you can vMotion things around again.
Yeah, partially hydrated data coming up from a backup target. It's one of those things where if you have to use it or if you have to back it up, or if you have to restore it and send it up for kind of an emergency use, it's nice to have. But most people, I'm not sure, are trying to leverage instant recovery off of traditional backup appliances.
Yeah, not a lot, but it's a nice emergency to have backup.
Hey, question for you guys. SSDs, they lose data if they don't have power after a while, right?
That's it's been a thing. I haven't seen that happen in practice. Although we did have, as we were going through the lab, we were firing up some older almost half decade old SandForce based things that were not happy at all to be powered back on.
Yeah, we've had plenty of stuff that's just not come back after not being powered on for a while, but it's hard to tell.
You know, error recovery and stuff that's built in is designed to kind of handle that, but I haven't encountered anything that was too corrupt or that I've noticed that like really old Flash platforms. But
to your point, Tom, it's not something that you'd want to do if you're going to back up your data and go throw a drive in a safe deposit box at the bank. You're better off with a hard drive than an SSD because of that issue.
Yeah, I see Blaze kind of nodding his head. Oh, by the way, for our listening audience, this makes for great pod.
Great radio.
You gotta see Blaze in his office there. It has this like 1970s wallpaper and rack there, just
in the background. Yeah. Maple syrup just oozing from the walls.
Well, it's the latest fashion here in Canada.
Yeah. The 70s is the latest fashion.
Oh yeah.
What's that box to your left there, Blaze? Other left, my left, your
up
left.
Here?
No, on your desk.
Oh,
by,
this is
behind your
really
phone.
Great radio, Tom.
Yeah, great pod. Great pod.
Yeah, he's making Blaze. That's a rotary dial phone. Headphone.
Oh, that's what I'm talking to you on. Those are my Bose 700s.
How do you like those?
They are about the best that I have ever used. Bose finally got it so that you can remove the ear cups easily. That's usually the thing that breaks on them.
Yeah, so I was looking for a new pair of headphones. I settled in on the QC35 since I enjoyed the just regular over-ear noise canceling headphones of old. And they're great for listening to music. But the headset functionality was horrendous. It has this
the voice quality.
Well, listening to it, it's not listening to the other person talk isn't a problem. It's the it uses the microphones to kind of incorporate outside sound and then amplify it back at you, so you can kind of get an idea of what your voice sounds like through the noise cancellation. But like kid noises or like a dishwasher or like all these other things, like it brings it in this warped and distorted way, and it sounds awful, and you can't disable it.
Nobody believes that you operate a dishwasher.
We should get Blaze to talk about Bose more, get a little marketing opportunity.
Oh, yeah. We love Bose, and this segment brought to you by Bose.
Best Blaze has ever heard.
Yeah, sponsor our Canadians, Bose. I ended up going with
the noise in my office.
Yeah, it does. It kills the rack noise. I ended up getting the AirPods Pro, and I'm about a month into them. They combined a wired in-ear Bose noise-canceling set and an in-ear Bluetooth wireless set, and I've been really happy with them. Still working on the proper ear fit. I'm kind of hoping somebody comes out with
Those things are sold out everywhere, and Apple is I think it's come out that it's a $6 billion a year business for the
AirPods.
Yeah, for AirPods only on Apple.
That doesn't count their Beats and other.
No, just AirPods right now.
That's crazy. They're good. The sound quality is good. So you talk about hearing dishwashers. I did a conference call over Thanksgiving break on the beach, and the people on the other end weren't hearing seagulls or kids or waves or anything. So it was
so all conference calls are going to be done from the beach.
They should be done from the beach. Although there is a downside. Once you get used to the little tiny in-ears, you've got to just make sure to have them. And because they're so small, it's easy to forget them.
Have you ever lost one or gotten close to losing one?
No, but I forgot one once when I went to the Healthplex and I was running at the track, and it was miserable because I got there, reaching my bag, and I'm like, oh gosh, I don't have anything. So already this run...
Is one a primary? Like, if you only had one, can you listen to like the right ear or the left ear, or is one a primary that always has to be there?
I think maybe the right one, because that one always seems to play, but I really don't know. But the important part is
remix the mono.
Yeah, okay. So the important part is that I had to do my run without any sound whatsoever, which was a miserable...
People talk to you. That's the worst part.
People do talk to you. No headphones. Or when you start lapping these ladies, so I was lapping these two old ladies, and every time I passed
them. Push
them
out of the way.
I can't laugh, old ladies. They always beat me.
Every time I went around, their conversation was getting progressively worse. And I think, like, this is one thing about getting old, but you got to find a way to stay positive. So every time I would go around, I would get like 7 seconds of the conversation, you know, so the three coming up and then, you know, three or four as I passed them. And they went from starting to complaining about someone who had knee surgery, who wasn't doing well, to about five more times around I went, someone had died. And then these ladies were talking about moving to Minneapolis where everything would be better. So I don't really know. But forgetting your headphones for a workout is a miserable place to be.
It's the worst.
I just ran the numbers on that. $6 billion divided by $254, isn't that about what they cost?
Yeah, $250. Comes to, yeah.
Yeah, $23 million, $23.5 million. So do you think they're selling that many of those things?
I mean, they're sold out
yeah,
right
they're
now.
Hard. They're hard to like find.
Worldwide, probably.
Yeah.
Apple's crazy popular.
Well, and places. Who was that? There was some basketball player or rapper. Someone came out this week and said that they had lost 230 pairs of AirPods. So while most people aren't going to go
through... Where did they lose them at?
Yeah, I have no idea. Well, that's the thing, though. They're small. It's really easy to lose these things.
That's insane. We could go help them find them.
They do the Find My app now that used to be Find Friends, that was Find My Phone. Anyway, the new combined app, it'll show you the last location the AirPods were when they were connected to wireless.
Can they beep?
I don't know if you can make it beep. But you could at least see last time you used them where they were, but if you put them in the little case and put them in your pocket and leave,
it's like, oh, then, it's in my house.
Yeah, maybe, unless you move them. Anyway, this is exciting conversation. Tom, you're working on some Formulas Black. We've talked about them quite a bit. Kevin's working on the review. What's the update on the review with that process?
Yeah, we wrapped up bare metal testing very fast in our Sysbench testing, and we're moving on to the virtualization side, and then when that wraps up, going back to our VDBench synthetic test.
See, I think one of the neatest things about their story is the virtualization piece, because so many of these technologies, we've seen it on NVMe over Fabrics with some of the SSD guys, we've seen it in a couple other ways, even DSSD, which was awesome, but had all this additional weight to make it work. The fact that they've got a little hypervisor to do these things without any real specialized componentry is, I think, is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Tom, what are you thinking on this as you keep digging in here? We're looking to get an introductory piece out on them and their technology. What is it about them that excites you?
Well, what excites me is we, you know, have this great technology, storage class memory, that we haven't figured out what the heck to do with it yet.
Yeah.
And these guys might be the killer app. I mean, they're doing a lot of the right things. They make it so any app, any data can reside on it without having to re-architect, rewrite code. They have enterprise features in it. You can do HA with it. You can actually expand the thing over two nodes. Which is pretty dang cool. So you can have one file system spanning two different nodes, running on the SCM on both those nodes. So that's pretty dang cool. You can back up the LEM. That's the block device that they create out of SCM. Or actually, you can use a DRAM because SCM doesn't work on everything yet. Or if you want that extra little boost of speed, you can run it on DRAM. So I mean, on paper, it looks great. I'm really, really excited to see how Kevin, you know, paper's good, but when you put the product to the metal, that's really the tell-all.
So far, it's been good. It's even got a GUI, which, you know, I like. I'm not a big CLI guy.
Yeah, it's surprisingly well-rounded. I mean, considering kind of iffy documentation right now on persistent memory is, this platform is fairly good.
Yeah, and what I like about it, you said you like the GUI. Talking to the guys, they say, actually, it's an API first deployment. Everything you can do in the GUI, you can write code. And with this, but let me see if I can get all the buzzwords in here, this self-healing, self-managing, no ops type world. I mean, that's a big thing.
All you're missing is digital transformation.
Oh, yeah. Damn it.
Hopefully that one will slow down this year on the messaging. We will see. We didn't cover it in the news this week, but Tom, I know you brought up the Habana acquisition from Intel. What's going on there?
Yeah, I found that pretty dang interesting that Intel dropped $2 billion on a Habana, which is a AI hardware accelerator. Sorry, I'm not quite up on the buzzwords in the AI, probably machine learning, something in there. But I mean, this company had maybe 30 people in it, I think. I think it's pretty dang small. Israeli startup, some really smart people in it, but you know, Intel dropped some of that
Intel
money on them.
It'll be interesting to see what they're going to do there. I know as part of Intel Scalable Xeon second gen, there was the launch of some new FPGAs. They're definitely wanting to be more in this computational space outside of just the CPU, obviously. So I would expect many more new products to come as either an add-on or some other way to integrate into existing systems. What else do you have going on in the PAC Northwest lab, Tom? We were talking Windows Terminal before, which is always exciting.
Well, now when I absolutely hate Windows Console from day one. It's one of those little annoying things that just drive me up the wall. You can't resize the thing. It's, you know, you got to go into settings to do anything with it. And so after, let's see, Windows came out in what, 1986? So after 30, 40 years, they actually have a decent console. You can resize this thing by just stretching it. It has a couple other neat features. You can bring PowerShell console into it with just, you know, clicking the title bar and saying PowerShell. And you guys, I don't know if you guys know this about me or not, but
I'm afraid for what's about to be revealed.
Windows subsystem for Linux is one of the neat things that Microsoft did. It's where you run a little, basically, VM on Windows. You don't need to install a whole lot. You can pull down these packages from Microsoft. So right now I got Ubuntu and SUSE running in the background on my Windows machine, my Windows 10 system. So it's WSL, pretty dang cool. And so you can also access those directly from this new Windows terminal. It's in preview now, and I think you just go out to the Microsoft Play Store and download it. Give it a try if you want to resize your console.
Is it wrong that I'm just using PuTTY and I just don't care?
Well, with PuTTY, can you connect directly to your Windows system, the one it's on? I've only used it for SSH.
No, I mean, but I just pretend I'm not using Windows Console when I'm doing that.
No, okay.
You just feel dirty?
Yeah, I close my eyes.
So does anyone else have this visceral response? I see Blade there, nodding his head back and forth. Anyone else just hate Windows Console, or is that a Tomism?
Yeah, it looks like a Tom problem.
Yeah. Once again.
Yeah, again, yes, again. Next week is Christmas. Most people will be relaxing with their families, having political arguments and things of that nature. Kevin's going to be reworking our networking. That sounds
exciting.
Exhilarating, yeah.
Yeah, going from a smaller Ubiquiti USG to a bigger USG 4 Pro.
That's not the only change, though. Don't you have to undo a mistake that was made many years ago?
Yeah, I mean, there's some networks that are 192s, there's 10 dots, there's 172s. We operate a 176 in our lab, which at the time it was deployed, that range wasn't being used. And now it is, which caused some strange confusion before I realized my mistake. But we have probably 200 or 300 VMs that need to be migrated over and different DNS in the lab. But I'm going to start migrating some stuff over to the 172 side soon.
So that we're not direct connecting to China or whatever we were doing before?
I think it's like Dubai or something, but it's blocked off in our from our router, but it makes it weird for a lot of companies that are trying to type in management IPs and like, yeah, it's 176, whatever. And they start typing 172, they can't find it. I'm like, no, it's 176. And they're like, what the hell?
Exactly. What the hell describes most of the networking that occurs in this office?
At least it's functional.
Question for you guys, network questions, two questions. SPF Plus, the little modules that you plug in there, I've been kind of looking at those, and some say, oh, this one's designed for Cisco, this one's designed for, you know, Netgear, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Does that matter? And then the follow-on question that has absolutely nothing to do with the first question is, you guys running DSL or just commercial Comcast into the Midwest lab there? What are you guys doing?
So on the first question is, the transceivers are almost always hardware identical. The problem comes down to the device IDs.
I thought it was a sunscreen question. Didn't he say SPF?
No.
SPF.
Oh.
SFP. But it is.
Yeah, the...
yeah. We use 50 sunscreen, Tom. And for you, I'd recommend 200.
They're almost all the same.
Very pasty, man.
But a lot of vendors, Cisco especially, like to whitelist their own transceivers. Which has presented some odd problems for us since in the past it was 40 and now it's 100 gig switching, and to connect up 10 or 25 gig SFPs, we use QSFP to SFP breakout cables. So we're using short reach copper. And it's not optical, so we have to use the transceivers on our cables. Before it was Mellanox, now it's Dell supplied. For a lot of platforms, it's not a problem, but others, for example, Cisco, you're stuck with, you plug in your cable, and it's like unsupported cable inserted. Like, it wants its own Cisco branded thing.
They want control over the ecosystem. By the way, whose switches are we using in the lab on that 100 gig?
Dell.
Dell EMC, this portion of the podcast, sponsored by Dell EMC Switches. They're cool. All right.
As long as you get past that, which for most hardware won't be a problem. I think usually if you're buying it on eBay or something, you might want to get a handful of that vendor's components. What was the part two of that question that was unrelated?
What's your network coming from?
We have fiber into the lab, courtesy of Cincinnati Bell, who is not a sponsor, but that was the most frustrating experience we've ever had. We had cable prior that was like six down, one up, and for the same price, we could go Cincinnati Bell for, it was like 100 down, 20 up.
Yeah.
It came into our complex, and for 2 years, we fought with Cincinnati Bell that was saying, it's coming to your area soon. As the building next door had it, and we couldn't get it, and like trying to explain to an engineer, like it's literally coming to the same tap.
We can see the internet outside.
We just
the door.
Have to drill an exploratory hole that way.
Oh, yeah,
sorry. Kevin and his holes
fish it through.
So yeah, we're running. I think right now we are 300 down, 50 or 90 up. It doesn't really seem restricted or throttled. But it's much faster and pretty nice.
And I'm always the guy, too, that says, Kevin always wants faster everything. And then I ask the silly question of what's the practical use? And there really hasn't been a practical need to have faster internet.
But until about a month ago.
Well, now, when we're doing these failovers like the Faction project for Dell EMC Unity.
Yeah, asynchronous replication between two Unity storage arrays.
Now it starts to make a little more sense, yeah?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why we're going to 10 gig up and down, and we'll have a fiber cable stretched out to Tom's location.
Oh, you want to run dark fiber to Portland?
Ooh, yes.
The Pac Northwest, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, another question.
Well, you can come out here to Canada.
Yeah, we'll gladly connect to Canada. Canada. Yeah.
If Bill Gates is listening, we could use some assistance for this endeavor.
Yeah, so Blaze and Lyle in our Slack thread both post their internet connections. What are you getting now to your house, Blaze?
I got 1 gig asynchronous.
That seems better.
Yeah, I can get 1 gig down, 250 up through Cincinnati Bell for, I think, $64 a month.
That's pretty amazing.
And that's where I'm kind of... Right now I'm on a business account that's... I think it's quite a 250 down, and I think I get maybe 80 up from it. But the pricing is roughly, for that same price, I could go to the consumer side and triple it, or go to a full 1 gig down for like minimal cost difference.
Blaze, you get a case of Molson with that internet every month. How does that work?
Well, we only get cans, but yeah, they do send us a case of Canadian.
Oh, great. Ooh, hey, can you send me some Puppers? Are you big Puppers fan?
Puppers.
Yeah, do you ever watch Letterkenny?
We're back on this again.
Hey, stop it.
As long as he doesn't bring up that bean-shaped facility. I'll
yes, be and I wait. I reached out to my friends at Isilon and said, hey, what's the deal with the bean-shaped National Security Agency in Utah?
And
they said, maybe it's an homage to Ronald Reagan's jelly beans. Don't know. So that I will continue my quest to find out why the NSA is shaped like a
Could it not just be a geographical issue, taking advantage of the rise in the land?
Yeah, they dropped $10 billion on that thing. They would have, I mean, they...
You could flatten the land pretty well for $10 billion.
Yeah.
I think the aliens would have done it already out there.
See, this is why it's write everything on paper in a closed-off room with no lights.
Yeah, with a tinfoil hat and metallic lining over everything.
Yeah. Hey, what movies you guys?
Sorry, the tinfoil hat just, you know, just boosts the signal.
What movies you guys going to see over the holiday weekend?
I'm at Star Wars in 2 hours. Adam's telling me how terrible it's going to be, though, trying to ruin my time.
I'm trying to make it better, because I'm keep saying how bad it's going to be, and when you see it, and it's not that bad, you're going to be like, oh.
So you're going to set the level so low.
Yeah, your expectations now.
You can't trust. I haven't looked at any of the end user that might have been posted last night.
I would not do that.
Oh, for crying out loud. But you can't trust the critics.
They're spoiling it badly.
The critics are morons.
I mean, do you want to go see Star Wars, or do you want to go see Cats?
I definitely don't want to see Cats.
I kind of want to see Cats.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, it's fun when there's, you know, real people on Broadway. I don't know about
Cats freaky. With lightsabers.
No, I want to see Cats because it looks freaky.
Cats with lightsabers. I still want to see Ford versus Ferrari. Did anyone see that yet?
Man, I wanted to see that. My youngest had his first movie. I don't think it was this week. I think it was last week.
Joker.
Was it Joker?
No, I went to go see Frozen 2. Might do Ford versus Ferrari next time. He likes cars.
Watch the doc. It's on Netflix, 24 Hours of Le Mans. Watch that first and then go see the movie.
Okay. Yeah, I went and saw the movie. Definitely give it. Well, I'd give it two thumbs up, except
two
for
beans
it has,
up.
Yeah.
Two beans up, except for it has Matt Damon in, who I actually despise. He just, I kept looking at him thinking, no, you're not Shelby. But the story is fantastic. And I saw it when I was in L.A., went to the Patterson Auto Museum and the Bugatti Museum up in Oxnard. But it's a really good story. I highly recommend it.
I think I'll just watch The Irishman again, maybe a couple more times.
Oh, yeah, you finally got that on the airplane, right?
I'm not even done. I think I still have like 20 minutes left.
One sitting, no bathroom breaks. It was fantastic.
Yeah, you were on a metal can, though. You had no...
In a metal seat, too.
Oh, great.
Couldn't get up if I wanted to.
You still haven't finished Irishman?
No, it just got really boring, so it's still in the continue watching side.
Oh, come on. It's just too smart for you.
Boring is not a word I would use to describe that one.
But, yeah, but it's got its moments where it can be a little bit slow. I do have one other update. I know that we've spent every podcast talking about the cowboy hat, and we had my wife texting during the recording last time after she saw the pictures. I would like to generally report that cowboy hat is a worthwhile investment for all men out there.
Does she listen to the podcast?
She tells me she does, but so now we're talking about her and talking about the cowboy
you'll
hat.
You'll
know
for a fact if she listens.
Yeah, well, no, I won't say anything to her. And when I get home, we'll see if she listened. But so advice piece one: invest in a cowboy hat. The ladies universally love it, apparently. Step two, I've made a recommended playlist for your cowboy hat intimate time, if you are so inclined. And this is a surefire, tested, data-rich environment for this playlist has a high degree of likelihood of success. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Song one, Cowboy Take Me Away by the Dixie Chicks. I don't know what ever happened to them, but that song...
Oh, no.
That song works well. It's a good starting song. Song two, Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy, Big and Rich.
Cowboy.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. And the last song in the playlist is Cowboy by Kid Rock.
Okay. Oh, want to be a cowboy, baby.
Right.
No Nordic death metal on that, I noticed.
No, it's all cowboy themed. When I shared this with people earlier, there was some question as to the length of the playlist, three songs. And I don't really understand it. That's like a solid 11 minutes, and I don't really know why you'd need more than three songs. So there's that. You write it down. Thank me later. I'm off to Star Wars. Any closing thoughts, anyone?
Oh, I got a question for Adam.
Oh,
when you were out on your junket, see, do your kids? I don't know if you got kids, but do they mind getting branded Christmas gifts, you know? Hey, look, I got this Cisco branded water bottle, Dad.
He loved Actifio teddy bear I brought back. So.
Yo, the Actifio gave you a teddy bear?
Yeah, a little tiny teddy bear, and he's really happy with it. I got a lightsaber from CDW, I think.
A classic.
And the backpacks have been fantastic.
Whacked in the head with that several times.
The backpack quality at Advance has gone way up. Did you have any trouble getting through TSA with your sword?
No, I did have that one issue with the backpack at the Citrix thing where they had the dinner for the press. I think it was right next to the airport and I didn't want the backpack, so I just left it sitting. And then here comes like security and like, what is this? And I'm like, I don't know who put that there.
Yeah, that's not normally a good play, is it?
I didn't want to carry it around, so.
But you also feel bad throwing it away.
Well, at Citrix, they just give you stuff.
Right.
And they look you in the eye. So it's not like you're like, no, I don't want it. Like,
yeah,
oh, sure.
I couldn't tax a killer for that one.
That's a, so they're giving nice you people. Like a Cisco switch? Here, take this.
Yeah.
Not yet.
I try.
Yeah. So I noticed a lot of people are giving away socks. What are your feelings about branded socks?
I have Solfire socks.
Yeah, I have lots of socks in my suitcase.
I gave someone Veeam socks.
Those are on my desk, yes.
I gave Kevin Veeam socks in June.
They'll make it home.
And they're on your desk.
They'll make it home.
Great. They won't get left at the airport?
Yeah.
Probably not. All right. This has been very exciting. We got to get out of here. I've got movies to see. Kevin's got labs to break. Adam, we've got no news. But we are going to keep cranking out a lot of reviews. We have a number of SSDs coming up. What else? We have another workstation.
Right now, SSDs and workstation. Tom just turned in another review.
Tom turned in another review.
I haven't looked at it yet, but
another thin client, I presume.
I don't know. Maybe the thick.
No, this
would be a surprise.
This was that was the Atrust, the little mini server.
The cube fellow.
Oh yeah, that has the Xeon processor in it.
All right. Well, we'll be back next Friday.
Yeah, it's been a little slice of heaven, Brian.
Yeah, I bet it will. And next week we'll have almost nothing technical to talk about, but we'll regroup anyway.
We'll be trashing Star Wars, so tune in to get angry.
Yeah, you better watch Star Wars by Friday. We'll do a lot of talk of Star Wars, Mandalorians, and compare Adam's Actifio Bear to the cuteness of a stuffed Yoda.
Actifio Bear wins.
Yeah, oh, I don't know. Thanks for listening, guys. Bye-bye.
Hey, good talking to you, Blaze.
Good being here. Thank you.